Counsel? Again, this is State versus Perez-Cruz. Counsel, when you're ready.
Good afternoon. May it please your honors, Chief Justice. My name is Jim McGow. I'm appearing on behalf of Mr. Perez-Cruz. I'd ask for 2 minutes to be set aside for rebuttal. There's really two main issues before the court on this case. One is whether the trial court abuses discretion in refusing to allow the defendant to withdraw his waiver of jury trial. And two is what approach the trial court should take in exercising that discretion. So Mr. Perez-Cruz was charged with first-degree sexual assault in October of 2013. 3 months later, on January 30th of 2014, he came in and waived his right to a jury trial. And at that time, the record's clear as to why he did that. There was negotiations ongoing between the parties, and there was hope that this matter could be resolved without a trial. And instead of blocking the court's trial calendar and logging that up, parties agreed to waive that and set a tentative plea hearing sometime in April. Subsequent to that, on April the 26th, 2014, a couple months later, shown in the transcript on page 5 in the defendant's motion, defendant's counsel was contacted by the state and indicated no offers on this case. So at that point, it became clear the defendant was going to proceed to trial.
Counsel, could we back up to the,
yes,
the first hearing? The hearing where there was I believe that he waived his right to a jury trial, and he also waived his right to a speedy trial at that point.
Correct.
The record, I believe, shows, and please correct me if I read this wrong, that the parties indicated that the matter was being set for a plea.
Yes, a tentative plea.
Tentative plea, because they,
yes,
were,
sure,
hopeful they were going to be able to resolve the case through plea negotiation.
That's correct.
And the judge, on his own, said, well, would you be willing to waive a jury trial?
That's correct.
Was there any, is your reading record, or I'm sorry, counsel, I don't know if you were there or not, but I need too many records anymore, so I apologize for that. But is there anything that indicates that there was any need to even talk about the jury trial?
My recollection is that there was some conversation in the record at that hearing about the defendant was agreeable to waive his speedy trial rights and his trial to a jury. I don't, stand here today, I don't remember if defendant talked about that independently or if that was only in the context of the court bringing it up.
Thank you.
So the record's clear as to why he did it. As Judge Engebati has indicated, that there was plea negotiations, then subsequently the state indicates no deals on this case. Immediately thereafter, on May the 5th, so this communication came on April the 26th, and then on May the 5th, the defendant filed the request to withdraw his right to a jury trial, and that was set for hearing. And really the only thing that was talked about in regards to the state of why they were objecting to it is that it had passed a couple of jury panels, and doesn't look like it's going to be set for jury time at least in June. And so for that reason, they were objecting, but they had subpoenaed any witnesses. And it's important to note that at the time that the defendant came in and waived his right to a jury trial, no trial was set. At the time that the defendant filed the motion to withdraw that waiver, no trial was set. At the time that he came in for a hearing on May the 19th, no trial was set. And it wasn't until the judge filed the court filed a written order denying that request on May the 29th, called the parties in June, and then set the trial that subsequently got set for sometime in November. So no indication that anybody was prejudiced, no witnesses were prejudiced, that there was no delay of trial because no trial was set. And the cases in Nebraska aren't real analogous to shed any real assistance with determining this matter. And that's because there's really only three reported Nebraska cases on this particular. First is the Sutton case from 1957, and then the second case is the Cava case from 1984. And both those cases, the defendant came in on the day of trial The defendant waived jury trial. It was set for a bench trial. Came on the day of the bench trial and said, on second thought, I want my jury trial. That wasn't the case here. We didn't have a trial date set. Zumunsky, the 1988 case, is the only other case in Nebraska that's dealt with this issue. And in that case was a little bit different because the defendant in that case showed up on the day of the jury trial and said, I'm not ready to proceed today. I want a continuance. The judge said, no, we're going to proceed with the jury. The jury's out waiting. We're going to go forward. The defendant then said, okay, then I want to waive my jury trial rights. The judge said, okay. It was set for bench trial, and then subsequently he filed a motion to withdraw that. It was clear in that case, as the Supreme Court determined, it was clear in that case that it was all just a tactic to continue the jury trial and really for no other reason. Here, completely different situation. Those cases, unfortunately, are analogous. So once the court determines whether there was discretion, whether the court did or didn't abuse the discretion, then really the question becomes of how do trial courts exercise, what approach should trial courts take in exercising that discretion? And unfortunately, none of the cases cited by myself or by the government really deals in any way with how trial courts are supposed to analyze that. And we provided a case out of Vermont, the State versus Sweeney case in our brief, that we thought really put forth the best conversation of how different jurisdictions have taken or what approach different jurisdictions have taken. And there's really two different ways of looking at this. The first is that the defendant would have to make a showing that the defendant is either harmed or a circumstance on the defendant's part has changed. Or the other approach, and that's taken by a minority of jurisdictions, or the other approach taken by the majority of jurisdictions, is that the defendant should be entitled to withdraw that waiver of jury trial unless it can be shown that the parties are adversely affected or the defendant's not making that motion in good faith. And we would submit that under either standard, the court abused its discretion. The circumstances clearly changed if the court were to go with the minority approach. The circumstances clearly changed because parties were involved in plea negotiations. That broke down. And on April the 26th, the state indicated there would be no deals on this case. So the circumstances were different from when the defendant waived its right to a jury trial. On the other hand, if the court uses the other, the view or the approach taken by the majority, the state was not adversely affected. There were no witnesses that had to be called off. The state hadn't done anything or indicated on the record that they'd done anything extraordinary in preparation for trial that had not been set yet at that point. And then I think in reviewing the record, you'll see that the bulk of the discovery, the depositions, pretrial motions, came after that point, after the defendant moved withdraw the waiver.
And when was it actually tried then in relation?
In November.
November, so several months later.
Yes, Your Honor. The request was made in early May. The hearing was set on May 19th, and it wasn't, the trial didn't start until November 17th.
And did the court articulate its reasoning for denying the motion?
Did not. That order, a written order, is on page 9 of the transcript, and there really is no indication for either side to really attach this is why the court granted it. The court just indicated there was a hearing and that the request was denied.
Doesn't the court say that based upon the evidence, the hearing was denied, or the request was denied?
I believe that's true, Judge, but the only evidence that was really offered at that hearing was the transcript of the plea hearing, that the plea was made knowingly, intentionally, and voluntarily.
I understand that. I just don't know what evidence supported his position or her position. I think that the judge says what the basis is. It says it's the evidence that was presented.
I believe that's true, Judge, but I guess the point that I was making is there's no indication in the order from the court of what analysis the court used in making a determination of how to exercise that discretion. And I'd reserve the remainder of the time. Thank you.
Counsel for Appellee.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is George Love on behalf of the Appellee, the State of Nebraska. Constitutional right of the right to a jury trial is a personal right unlike most constitutional rights, certainly during a plea hearing, can be waived. So what the defendant is now doing is blaming the court for his personal decision to waive a jury trial. Well, you make decisions, there's consequences for those decisions. Basically, the law is absent a showing of a clear abuse of discretion, you don't get to revoke that right. There has been no abuse of discretion shown here. Trial court stated, the court noted that Cruz waived his right to a jury trial by jury at a time that no plea offers were on the table. Three jury terms had passed, according to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor pointed out that sexual assault cases, especially where children are involved, don't get better with time, and they don't.
But the state wasn't able to try it for 6 months.
I beg your pardon?
The state was unable to try it to the bench for 6 months. So the argument seems to not hold much water.
At the time he revoked it, they were in, at least according to defense counsel, at the time of the waiver, they anticipated, or they were, at least what I deduced, was into discussions for plea offers.
And the state agreed that by not refuting it, didn't they?
I didn't hear the last.
The state agreed that they were in plea negotiations by not refuting what defense counsel said. I mean, if they were not in plea negotiations, you would have thought that the state's
attorney... You're inferring from a silent record they were in plea negotiations?
Well, they didn't deny it. They didn't deny it, and you would have thought
that's
they would
true. Have. That's true. He didn't deny it on the record.
To the judge.
That's correct.
So you would have... If I was the trial judge in that situation, I would presume they were in plea negotiations.
Well, the trial court set it for a plea hearing, not for a bench trial.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Didn't that make a difference?
No.
Why?
The reason is it's the right that's at issue and whether the court abused its discretion. The right is gone. It's gone. Now the question is, well, I want the right back.
Who's been
Did the court abuse its discretion?
Excuse me, Mr.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said if the court granted the request, how was the state adversely affected?
Because jury trial, or strike that, sexual assault trials with
children
don't get better with time.
They hold it for 6 months, it makes a difference.
And
because
if you go back and forth between saying I'm going to have a jury trial and I'm not going to have a jury trial, you automatically put delay in the system. Because the way the trials are set up on jury terms and bench trials. So when you go back and forth, the motion to withdraw it actually delayed the trial again. So now, how did that
stop? How did that delay?
Pardon me?
How did that
Because you have to have a hearing on the motion to withdraw the waiver of the jury trial. You can't go forward.
That took 14 days.
That's right. But the point is it's set for jury terms. You already missed three jury terms. What happened in that time? How is the court responsible for that?
The court set for a plea. The court didn't set for a trial.
That's right. Until it learned that it didn't have a plea through the motion to withdraw the waiver of a jury trial. And it wasn't set at the time he waived. So it's irrelevant. They didn't have a plea offer at the time.
They set the matter for a plea. At the time that the waiver was
on the representation of defense counsel that we anticipate a plea agreement and it fell through. That's not the court's responsibility.
The state represented that there might be a plea agreement too.
That's true. But that is not the court's responsibility. The court's responsibility is to manage its docket. The decision was made by the defendant. That's his right. It's his personal right. He chose to waive it. And there's been no abuse of discretion shown on the part of the court to reactivate that right that he waived. And that's the standard. There is no abuse of discretion here. He waived knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently. If we're going to go, it almost sounds like we're going to keep doing do-overs at the trial level.
So if the defendant waived it, And under your position, why even allow a defendant to move to withdraw it?
You can move to withdraw it, but you're going to have to show a valid reason. Then that's when the abuse of discretion.
And so your position is the thought that they were going to have a plea agreement and then it didn't happen, that's not enough.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. That goes on in every case. Mm-hmm. That's not a valid reason. And the court denying the revocation of the waiver on that basis is not an abuse of discretion.
Is that the evidence you think the judge is referring to?
I beg your pardon?
Is that the evidence that you think the court was referring to in its order?
I think it's a lack of evidence that the court's referring to.
It says, based upon the evidence presented.
Yeah, none. There wasn't any evidence presented other than the fact that the plea offer fell through. That's it. And if I may, Your Honor, I want to address something that kind of came up on appeal, and I think it's an issue of basically first impression, and that is the idea of raising an ineffective assistance of counsel claim when co-counsel was trial counsel after the fact. I think that presents an inherent conflict of interest because the two attorneys, rather than zealously representing their clients, are going to be second-guessing each other on which one's going to get tagged on appeal for ineffective assistance of counsel claims. So I don't think that should be allowed in this case, even though the attorney was not of record at the time of the waiver of the jury trial. He certainly was of record during the revocation portion, the trial, and so on and so forth. So I don't believe ineffective assistance counsel claims should be allowed under those circumstances on direct appeal. You create a situation where the client's best interest is no longer important. So I think that I would ask that the court deny the ineffective assistance counsel claim for the reason that he was trial counsel in this matter, and based at least analogous to Dunster and other cases similar to that, attorneys in the same office, for example, public defender and so on and so forth, you can't raise those claims on direct appeal. And I think that the purpose behind the inability to raise ineffective assistance of counsel claims with two attorneys being trial lawyers applies in this particular case, and I would ask that the court deny that for those reasons. Find that the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the revocation because there was no good reason to allow the revocation.
We ask you to affirm. The basis, as I read the case law, for allowing the defendant to withdraw his waiver of his jury.
He doesn't have a right to that, Your Honor.
My understanding from the case law is when you address that issue, that one of the things you should consider is whether or not it affects the state's ability to have time to try the case. In this particular instance, is it your position that there was anything done that would have tried the case sooner from the date that the matter was set for arraignment for the
plea? I think you're putting the burden on the wrong person, Your Honor, with that analogy. The burden is on the defendant to show why he wants to wait or to revoke his waiver of a jury trial, and then the court can make a decision based on what is presented, not, gee, I just made a mistake and I wanna.
Did you cite
that's
a
not,
case? Did
that's
you cite
not an a, abuse of discretion.
Did you decide a case in your brief that holds that?
Pardon me?
The Sutton case,
for example. That what I'm talking about is the standard of review, Your Honor, and that is clear error, clear abuse of discretion. That's stated specifically in Sutton. You can't find that here. It's not an abuse of discretion when nothing is presented by the defendant. It's his burden to show the trial court why the trial court should allow him to withdraw a constitutional right, a personal right, that he knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently waived.
Thank you.
That, I'd ask you to affirm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Love. How much time does the appellant have?
Thank you. So the state's position seems to be that once that right is waived, it's forever gone, and that we would argue that negates how the courts treat the right of the Fourth Amendment to unreasonable searches. You can always stop that at any time. You can always limit that at any time. The right to against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment at any time, you can re-invoke that right if you've decided to talk. Or the right to a speedy trial. You go in, you can waive your speedy trial, but at any time you can file a request for a trial, and that cuts off that right. But for some reason, the state argues that this is somehow different, and I think the only real difference here is it involves court scheduling. So if you look at it from that standpoint, does anything that the defendant did it prevent or did it cause any delay or any abuse of process of the court? And it seems to me that if you're telling the court, I need to continue it, I need to continue it, I need to continue it, that's more of an abuse than the way it was handled in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you both, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The matter is submitted. Counselor excused. Thank you. The next matter this afternoon is Graham versus City of Lincoln Personnel Board.